This is Tuesday, June 20th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming up, a U.S. resident who had been held prisoner in North Korea says his treatment differed from that said to be meted out to Otto Warmbier.
It was mentally and emotionally straining. It wasn't physically abusive at all.
We have the latest on the death of Otto Warmbier. Also ahead, you'll hear how one expert thinks recent developments in Syria could lead to a greater presence by Iran in the embattled country. And a printer can make a new guitar. How good is that guitar? Stay with us and find out. All on today's International Edition. The parents of Otto Warmbier, the American college student who died Monday after being detained in North Korea for nearly a year and a half, said in a statement he had completed his journey home and was at peace shortly before passing away. Warmbier was returned to the United States last week in a coma. Doctors in Cincinnati said the 22-year-old had suffered severe brain damage while in North Korea, but that it was not clear what had caused it. North Korea said Warmbier fell into a coma soon after he was sentenced in March of last year for stealing a political poster from the North Korean hotel. The government claimed the young man fell into a coma after contracting botulism and being given a sleeping pill. The Warmbier family disputes that claim, saying North Korea had brutalized Otto. U.S. President Donald Trump noted Warmbier's death Monday at the White House.
He spent a year and a half in North Korea. A lot of bad things happened, but at least we got him home to be with his parents, where they were so happy to see him, even though he was in very tough condition. But he just passed away a little while ago. It's a brutal regime, and we'll be able to handle it.
The U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, said Warmbier's death will be a lasting reminder of the barbaric nature of the North Korean leadership. The organizers of Warmbier's trip to North Korea say they will no longer take U.S. citizens to the country. Young Pioneer Tours, based in mainland China, posted on its Facebook page Tuesday that Warmbier's death indicates the risk that American tourists face in North Korea has become too high. Warmbier had been held by Pyongyang for 17 months, having tearfully confessed by trying to steal a propaganda banner while on a tour of the secretive country. In the winter of 2016, as news spread of Warmbier's detention, another American living nearby in Ohio was watching news reports intently as that incident unfolded. VOA's Kane Farabaugh has more on how the story of two Americans detained in North Korea began under similar circumstances but had vastly different outcomes.
Jeffrey Fowl has more in common with Otto Warmbier than just the state of Ohio, a place they both called home.
I was surprised that there was somebody getting caught up in the system again already.
The system was North Korea, where in 2014, Fowl was on a tour sanctioned by the reclusive communist government, similar to the one Warmbier joined in 2016.
The North Koreans lure Americans to travel to North Korea via tour groups run out of China who advertise slick ads on the internet proclaiming no American ever gets detained off of our tours and this is a safe place to go.
Despite that advertising and North Korea's history of detaining Americans, Fowl was not concerned.
But I like visiting the out-of-the-way places.
An out-of-the-way place on Fowl's itinerary was the northern port city of Chongjin, where he left a Korean English Bible in the bathroom of a nightclub, knowing it would be frowned on by the North Korean government.
Jesus says to take the gospel into all corners of the world, and I was trying to do my small part, take one Bible to some small corner of the world.
Like Warmbier, Fowl was stopped at the airport on his way out of the country. He was first held at a hotel, then at a North Korean guest house, where he was isolated but not mistreated, while authorities interrogated him about his Bible.
It was mentally and emotionally straining. It wasn't physically abusive at all.
While in detention, Fowl says his limited appearances with the media were orchestrated.
That was pretty tightly controlled, and I was coached, given guidelines on what to say.
Sweden helped negotiate Fowl's release in October 2014, after spending 6 months in North Korea. He says the episode brought his family closer together.
People have asked me if I snap my fingers and go back and erase that whole incident, would I do it? At this point, I would say no.
But with Otto Warmbier now dead after suffering severe brain damage while in detention in North Korea, Fowl says Americans should think twice about traveling there.
Not in today's current political climate. I would say up and down, I don't recommend it to anybody right now.
Fowl lives about 80 kilometers from the Warmbier family. While they have not met, Fowl continues to pray for the Warmbiers and the three Americans still detained in North Korea. Kane Fairbaum, VOA News, Miamisburg, Ohio.
Well, Andrew Palaszewski, who covers social media for us here on International Edition, is here. Is the Warmbier story still making the rounds in social media?
It is, and we're seeing the overwhelming emotions of sadness and anger. We're seeing sadness for his family, for this whole situation, how it played out, although many people are noting that at least he was able to come home before he passed away. And then a lot of anger at North Korea, and even anger at the political leaders in the United States, pointing fingers at who exactly is to blame, why he wasn't brought home sooner. His death being called by many on social media a murder, and that's where a lot of these questions and these emotions come from. What kind of additional sanctions are going to go against North Korea? Why are Americans still allowed to travel to North Korea? And then specific to this case, why did Warmbier go there in the first place, knowing the risks? But definitely an extremely sad story and an emotional story all around.
Well, I saw the webpage for the tour company, the China-based tour company that arranged it. And they were advertising that it's totally safe. You know, it's fine. You'll love it there. You'll have a great time. And nobody's ever been hurt, anything like that. But after what happened yesterday, they came out with a statement today saying, no more Americans.
Right. And it's going to be interesting to see if that tour company is held liable, maybe some lawsuits against them. One of our VOA colleagues I was speaking with said that the tour company apparently is very small, but the reason why they attract so many visitors is because they do a lot of advertising on social media. So that's one way that they connect with a lot of these students.
Yeah, for sure. And what else is going on? Real quick.
Today is hashtag World Refugee Day. So we're seeing a lot of people talking about refugees trying to flee war, torn or conflicted countries for a better life. And we're seeing the UNICEF campaign, hashtag a child is a child. Many people talking about children refugees being banned from coming into certain countries, saying that they're not a risk, and they're putting up different images of children saying, I'm a child, not a threat. So lots of advocacy for refugees today.
And celebrate if you would like, because here in the Northern Hemisphere, it's the first day of summer.
It is. Lots of people using hashtag first day of summer. They're out at the beach. They're having fun. I wish I was out at the beach, but we're here in Studio 22 bringing everybody the news.
Just imagine. Just imagine.
Andrew. No place I'd rather be.
Andrew Palaszewski with us here on International Edition. Among our top stories, the parents of Otto Warmbier, the American college student who died Monday after being detained in North Korea for nearly a year and a half, say in a statement he had completed his journey home and was at peace. A U.S. fighter jet shot down an armed pro-Syrian regime drone just after midnight Tuesday morning as the drone advanced on coalition forces in southern Syria. A new poll shows U.S. voters disapproving of President Trump's performance by a wide margin. A suicide car bombing in the Somali capital has killed at least 10 people and injured 18. And the United Nations human rights leader has called for an international investigation into recent murders in the center of the Democratic Republic of Congo. More on these stories on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition, and this is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
NASA has released the most comprehensive and detailed catalog of candidate exoplanets. Exoplanets, or extrasolar planets, are planetary bodies that exist outside of our solar system. The new extrasolar planet listing was constructed with data gathered by its Kepler spacecraft within the first 4 years of its mission. The space agency says its release of the catalog is also the final one that includes data gathered from the spacecraft's initial patch of sky view within the Cygnus constellation. The newest Kepler catalog includes 219 new planet candidates. 10 of them are said to be near Earth-sized and are orbiting within its star's habitable zone. The count of candidate planets identified by Kepler now stands at 4,034. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
The hard news coming out of the Syria conflict this morning is that Australia has announced it is temporarily suspending airstrikes by its forces in Syria. The move comes just days after a U.S. fighter jet shot down a Syrian jet, and Syrian ally Russia responded by threatening to treat planes from a U.S.-led coalition operating in the skies over Syria as targets. Defending that decision to shoot down the Syrian Su-22 jet that had bombed coalition-partnered forces near the Syrian town of Tabqa, White House spokesperson Sean Spicer told reporters, "We're going to do what we can to protect our interest. The Syrian regime needs to understand that we will keep the right of self-defense of coalition forces aligned against ISIS." The spokesman made it clear, however, that the U.S. would continue to work with partners to counter the threat of the Islamic State in Syria. Joining us on International Edition is Nicholas Harris. He is with the Center for New American Security here in Washington. Nicholas, thanks so much for being with us. How serious is this situation?
The situation is serious in the sense that there is an atmosphere that could lead to escalation. The escalation between Russia and the United States at this stage is unlikely. However, we could continue to see increased attacks by the Assad regime and Assad's Iranian allies against local Syrian U.S. partner forces that are conducting the counter-ISIS campaign. And that would be a major development that could force the U.S. into a conflict with Iran and Iran-backed proxy forces.
Well, it's obvious, as you're alluding to, that this whole Syrian conflict, especially in the eastern Syrian desert, has become a proxy war. It has been for a while. Quite a few players vying for territory vacated by ISIS losses. The increased participation of Iran might have moved to the forefront now. How much of a concern is that?
Iran's role in Syria is a major point of concern for the Trump administration. And now that the counter-ISIS campaign is winding down in Iraq, as Iraqi security forces and local militia forces take that city finally from ISIS, Iranian-backed Iraqi Shia militias will begin to flow into Syria to support Bashar al-Assad's war effort. And they are going to turn their eye to eastern Syria, to the Syrian desert, to the lower Euphrates River Valley, centered on ISIS's new capital, Deir al-Zor, near the Syrian-Iraqi border, and they want to get there first because they are worried, particularly the Iranians, that as the U.S.-led coalition continues to make gains and to seize and conquer territory from ISIS, that the U.S. will hold that territory in eastern Syria and, in fact, create an American military mandate that would prevent Assad from reclaiming all of his territory back and therefore begin a chain of events that could lead to the destabilization and potential collapse of Assad's regime.
Australia pulling out at least temporarily or suspending its airstrikes after the Syrian plane was shot down by U.S. jet. Is that a threat to the coalition at all?
It's a worrying concern, but the fact of the matter is that the U.S. has been conducting the bulk of airstrikes against ISIS, and the U.S. has really led the military effort to train up local Syrian partner forces against ISIS. Of course, if coalition partners decided to make a temporary suspension of operations into an indefinite suspension of operations into a permanent suspension of operations, that would be a concern. But I think at this point in time, there are major incentives for the United States and Russia to de-escalate their local Syrian partners. And this is a dynamic that we should be watching. Fundamentally, Syria is a geographic space now. There's no one unitary state from Damascus that controls all of Syria's territory. There are various zones of control. And Syria, in many ways, is like a monopoly board. And the more powerful local Syrian actors are trying to capture as much space on that board. And both the Russians and the Americans, as the most powerful outside actors from outside the region who are actively supporting local Syrian partners, have incentives to keep this from becoming a wider war and a wider conflict. However, local Syrian actors, particularly the Assad regime, have an incentive to try to force a conflict between the United States and Russia, because that could frustrate any potential project to create American military mandate in Syria that would frustrate Assad's ability to reclaim all of his country again.
Nicholas Harris, Bracevich Fellow at the Center for New American Security here in Washington, thanks so much for your contribution.
Thank you for having me today.
And we have further news coming from that part of the world. A United States fighter jet shot down an armed pro-Syrian regime drone just after midnight this morning, Tuesday morning, as the drone advanced on coalition forces in southern Syria. That, according to military officials, the U.S. F-15E Strike Eagle shot down the Iranian-made drone as it approached an established coalition combat outpost at near Atamf along the Syrian border with Iraq, where the U.S. is training local fighters to fight the Islamic State. Coalition forces shot down a similar pro-regime drone near the same location earlier this month, according to the U.S. Central Command. This is VOA.
VOA Special English, a way to learn American English and much more. Broadcasting a half hour of world news and features every day on radio. You can also find Special English on television and online at voaspecialenglish.com. For 50 years, helping people understand world events and the language and culture of America.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time.
With David Bandy.
We continue with International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Just received another story over the wire, the Associated Press wire, about another drone apparently fired from Iran, but this time in the other direction. Pakistani officials now are saying an Air Force fighter jet has shot down an unmanned Iranian drone in its southwestern Balochistan province. Both officials Tuesday said the unmanned aircraft was shot down over the weekend and was deep inside Pakistani airspace. They spoke on condition of anonymity. The Pakistani Air Force declined to comment on the matter. Iran in recent months has expressed concern over militants operating along the Pakistani border. Iran's army chief recently warned that the country is willing to strike militants inside Pakistan, remarks that drew a strong protest from Islamabad. Voters in the southern U.S. state of Georgia are choosing their new representative in the House of Representatives today in a special election that's being closely watched as a test of Republican strength under the Trump administration and the party's prospects of holding its majority in the House next year. The importance that both Republicans and Democrats placed on the race is evident in the money spent on both sides, more than $50 million, an amount that is far, by far, the most ever in a congressional race. Democratic candidate John Ossoff is a 30-year-old former congressional staffer running in his first election. His Republican opponent is 55-year-old Karen Handel, Georgia's former Secretary of State. Well, musicians tend to talk about their instruments in terms of tone and sound as often as the brand. Electric guitarists are no different, and they can expound on the bright sound of the Fender or the bass-heavy Gibsons, but now there's a 3D-printed electric guitar, and that could be just the beginning for 3D-printed musical instruments. VOA's Kevin Enochs has more.
It certainly sounds like an electric guitar, but 3D printing technology has turned it into an instrument that looks as unique as a guitarist's sound. This guitar was printed by a professor at Sweden's Lund University using metal powder and lasers.
They sound great. I mean, these are electric guitars, so, you know, scientifically what makes a sound is the magnets on the pickups picking up the string vibrations. Anything that affects the vibrations will affect the sound to a very small extent. But because there are electric guitars, they sound as good as any other electric guitar. Acoustic guitars would be a different story.
Some professional guitarists are not as easily impressed. This one says the 3D guitar is not better or worse, it's just different.
But ultimately, a guitar that's made out of a composite material like the printing material is going to resonate in a certain way, which is going to affect the sound, which could be a good thing, because you can make it consistent that way.
Lund has used 3D printing to make a number of electronic instruments, but he wants to move into a new medium.
I mean, this is an electric guitar. It sounds like an electric guitar. I believe that with wind instruments, you can make some completely unique sounding instruments. You do a flute that plays chords, for example.
Some of Lund's creations have found their way on stage, and he says his goal is to create custom-made guitars that cost the same as the more traditional wood-bodied designs. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
Well, that's going to wrap up today's program. Remember, you can get in touch with us at voanews.com. You can like us on Facebook at VOA Now. And you can follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. And we will read your communication on the air. So please do that. Thanks for joining us. Our thanks to Director Patrice Martin, our engineer Thomas Blondet. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy your day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
President Donald Trump recently welcomed Romania's President Klaus Iohannis to the White House. Romania, said President Trump, has been a valuable member of the coalition to defeat ISIS, and it's the fourth largest contributor of troops in Afghanistan. 23 Romanians have paid the ultimate price for their participation, and America honors their sacrifice. President Trump thanked Romania for increasing its defense spending from 1.4% of GDP to over 2% this year. We hope our other NATO allies will follow Romania's lead on meeting their financial obligations and paying their fair share for the cost of defense, said President Trump. The United States believes in strengthening the NATO alliance through greater responsibility and burden sharing among member nations, because together, said President Trump, we can confront the common security challenges facing the world. President Trump applauded Romania's efforts to fight corruption and defend the rule of law, and he commended President Iohannis' commitment to keeping Romania on this path. This work, he noted, is necessary to create an environment where trade and commerce can flourish and where citizens can prosper. I look forward to working with you to deepen the ties of both commerce and culture between our two countries. Romanians have made many contributions to the United States and to the world. Very notable among them was Nobel Prize laureate Elie Wiesel, who was born in Romania and passed away almost a year ago. President Iohannis has worked to further Holocaust remembrance and education in Romania, and President Trump saluted him for his leadership in that vital cause. The people of Romania have endured many hardships, but they have made a truly remarkable historical journey, said President Trump. I look forward to strengthening our alliance with Romania and our bonds with your people. The relationship has been good, but now it's stronger than ever.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.